Okay, good. So the title, what I said it was going to be about, was why this time of year specifically is unique to punishment. That means we started the 3 weeks, right? 17th to Thomas. That was the, we'll talk about it in a minute. And then we have 3 weeks that takes us to the 9th of Av, which is Tisha B'Av. And these 3 weeks are like the low point, you would call it. The low point of the people, of the nation, Beis HaMikdash. And the question is, why, what's it about this time of year? Because nothing's random. Nothing's random. Josh, now that you're live over here, you're going to hear your voice a lot. I'm going to put it all on you. So the question is, why is it that this time of year specifically is destined for punishment? Nothing's random. It's not like, oh, I happen to be in these 3 weeks. There must be something about these 3 weeks that make it special for punishment. So let's talk about that. We're going to go through a bunch of different points, and it's an unbelievable Maharal. He has an entire chapter in his Sefer, which is called Netzach Yisrael, which would be translated as the eternity of the Jewish nation. He has an entire book where he talks about exile, talks about redemption, and he says some really amazing things. So I'm going to start off, and we'll go through, we'll see what we have time for. We'll do piece by piece, and then we'll try and come out with some clarity. So the Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah in Maseches Tanis. Anybody learn Maseches Tanis? Josh, you do that? Yeah, there you go. David did. You did Tanis.
Yeah, I did.
Did Mishnah is Tanis. Yeah, yeah, yes. I'm doing it with Mishnah. Yeah, so Josh did it, and maybe I did it once upon a time. So the Mishnah says like this. Five things happened to our forefathers, that means to the early generation. Five different things happened on the 17th of Thomas. Five, and we have to listen to all the numbers. Five things happened on the 15th of Thomas. Five things happened on Tisha B'Av. Five plus five makes a total of 10. Now we're going to see that what I really want to see tonight is the morale specifically is, will open our eyes to every detail that it has depth. You know, you think five things happened on the 17th, five things happened on the 9th of Av. Every one of that pieces, the five, the 10, the date when it happened, how it happened, we're going to see the 7th of Av, the 8th of Av, the 9th of Av, the 10th of Av, the evening, the morning, every single piece has unbelievable depth. And that's really what I want to open our eyes to today. So we have five things on 17th of Thomas, five things on Tisha B'Av. Now, does anyone want to give a shot? What were the five, what were some of the things that happened on Shiva Asav Thomas?
Tablets were...
Temple?
Terry, what do you say?
The temple was destroyed?
That was Tisha B'Av.
The walls were breached.
The walls were breached, yep, that's one. And Josh said the other one, that the tablets were broken, the luchos were broken. That's two. What's number three?
The spies come back?
That was Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av.
Yeah, so we have so far the tablets, we have the walls were breached, we have the daily sacrifice stopped. In the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh, they placed an idol on the Beis HaMikdash.
That's number four. Good. His lifestyle.
What was that?
They placed an idol in the Beis HaMikdash.
That's what I was going to say.
They placed an idol in the Beis HaMikdash, and we got one more. There was somebody, a wicked person. His name was Apostamus. And he burned a Sefer Torah. He took a Sefer Torah and he burned it on 17th of Tammuz. So we have the Luchais. I mean, every one of these details are important. It's really amazing. We're going to get into...
Who was Apostamus?
I don't know who he was.
King or...
I don't know. I could guess, but I don't know. If you remind me of David, I'll try and look into it. We'll find the Mishnah. Apostamus was apparently somebody with some form of power, and he burnt the Sefer Torah. They have an idol. They have the daily sacrifice. The walls are breached, and the luchos were broken. Now, that's the five things on 17th of Thomas. Now, which five things do we have on Tisha B'Av? What are the five things? So, two temples.
Right.
That's two. I mean, the first temple and the second temple were both destroyed in Tisha B'Av. So that's two. Number three, did you mention that before?
Yes.
The spies.
Yes.
The spies came back, the Meraglim, and they were told on Tisha B'Av. They were crying about they didn't want to go. And they were crying, and they were told that they would not be allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael. It was decreed that they're not going to Eretz Yisrael. The fourth thing is it was a city of Beitar, which was destroyed. It killed thousands and thousands of Jews in this. It was one of the great cities of Israel. They destroyed the city of Beitar. And the fifth thing is that the words it uses of the Mishnah is that they plowed the city. That means it wasn't just that they breached the walls. They literally plowed it. I mean, they just turned it. They went in there and they just turned it over. There was not a stone that was not overturned. They plowed the city. They threshed it. They thrashed it, you would say. They really got it out. Those are the five. 5 + 5 = 10.
What was the fifth one on the first group?
On 17th of Tammuz?
Yeah.
The idol or the apostamus burning the Sefer Torah? Is that the one?
I only have four, but I have those two.
The floods were broken.
Yeah.
The floods were broken. They breached the wall. The daily sacrifice was stopped.
Oh, daily sacrifice.
Yeah, daily sacrifice. And then the person burnt the Sefer Torah and they have an idol in the base of it. Then we have on the 9th of Av, we have twice the temple was destroyed. We have the Beitar was destroyed. The city was overturned completely. And it was decreed on our forefathers that they're not going into Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
So let's start talking about this. And then a little bit later, we'll go into more into detail the 9th of Av, exactly the process of how it happened and when it happened. So the Maharal starts like this. And he says, every nation has their own characteristic. Right? If you look around the world today, every nation has their own culture. Now, not just every nation has its own culture, but every nation, but you would have nations that are complete clashes with each other. It means their culture, that means their personality, the way they do things, would be the complete antithesis of the other nation. Like, what example would you have for that today, where you have two different countries which are completely at loggerheads with each other? Not loggerheads in war, I mean they're just completely different approaches. Let's say, for example, England and America is not like that. England and America are different, but they're both democratic countries. They have slightly different ideas about how they do stuff. But you can have a communist country.
Iran versus Israel.
What do you say? Iran versus Israel. Exactly. That is a good example. Right, where you have one country whose mission is to wipe out the other country. That's a good example. You can say
Russia and the United States.
Yes.
Interestingly, yeah, and you can say a communist country, but that would be China, because Vietnam and the United States have more in common now than before, because they're getting the business
that
they're
right.
trying to drive out of China.
Exactly. Yeah, that is true. So that is true. But yeah, Russia, the United States, Iran and Israel, you could have Iran and the United States. All these countries, you see that they're different. And not just are they different, but they clash. That there are complete radical ends of each other. In America, like, freedom is the number one thing that you know, is spoken about. And in these other countries, it's control that's spoken about. It's you know, the listen to me that's being spoken about. Now, where does the Jewish nation come in? What is the Jewish nation? Where are we? So we're a nation. We have a culture. What is our culture? What is the culture of the Jewish nation? So the Maharal says something fascinating. I'm going to get to that in a minute. We'll put the Jews aside for a minute. Let's understand that the nation has its own place and they have their own culture. Not just that. Time, you have over the year, you have different time periods. In the summer, you have the winter, you have fall, spring, cold days, hot days, rainy days. You have many different days. Now the Maharal says, just like there's different places, there's also different times. And the Mishnah teaches us, there's really a verse in Kohelet, that there's nothing that doesn't have a specific time. That means that there are people that shine at certain times. As an example, you have people that Shabbos Jew, you know what I mean? Shabbos is that time. You see that they wait for Shabbos. Shabbos is that day. The week, all right, you get through the week. Shabbos is that day. You have some people where, you know, the Rosh Hashanah Jews. That's their day. You have people that love the winter. You have people that love the summer. You have people that hibernate. You know, everything in the world, besides for being different, was it has a specific time where they fit into that time. There's nothing that doesn't have a space and doesn't have a specific time. Now, the Jewish nation, this is the most important thing I think we have to understand tonight. The Jewish nation are exactly in the middle. We're not radical right, we're not radical left. And I don't mean right and left, that type of right and left. I mean, we are not radical. And either we're not at the edge. We are exactly in the middle. We cruise. Right? We're exactly plowing through the mud. We're not extremists. We're not extreme that. We're just middle of the road people. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What is the depth? And this is we need to really understand. What is the depth of understanding that the difference between being a radical or between being in the middle? It's just a nice thing that we're in between. What's the depth of saying that we are in between and we're not at the edges? This is a very classic Maharal type of thinking. It's a little bit different than the Sfasemis. It goes together in tandem, but a little bit of a different way of thinking. Anything which is at the edge means it's at the end and it's going to end. Anything which is in the middle is eternal. That's the thesis. Let's try and understand. Does that make sense, Josh?
Yeah.
We have to understand, think about it a little bit more. Something which is, I'll give you an example. You wake up in the morning and you start off your day. Now, 2 hours in the day, eight people bother you, right? The first guy bothered you, all right. Second guy, the third guy. By the eighth guy, you blow up, right? The person blows up. Well, there we go. That's right. I'm not talking to anyone. we all have had, I believe, times in our lives where we got pushed past our tipping point, right? And we blurted something out which we didn't really want to say. And we got what's the word for it? I forgot the word. It's the word that sounds like presses all your buttons. And whatever, we got angry. How long does that anger last for? How long does it last for?
Not long.
Not long at all. Why is it? The reason why it doesn't last is because that anger was extreme. It was an extremity. It wasn't middle. It wasn't regular. It was something where the person sort of got pushed and he got pushed over his top. So he's going to have a burst of anger. But it's precisely because it's a burst that means it's going to end. So if you ever see somebody acting irrational, you see somebody acting irrationally wild or irrationally angry or irrationally the other way, like too placid. The other way. Just he's watching, there are eight people in front of him who are, who are dying, and he's just like standing there, like, you know.
Nonchalant.
Right? You know that at some point it's going to hit him. So anything which is irrational, anything which is extreme, peaks and then it goes. What is the thing that it goes back to? It's always going to go back to the default. The default is always going to be in the middle. The person's default is that he's stable, that he's, or it should be like that, that the person's default, if somebody's default is not stable, then that's when he needs taken care of. But a person's default should be that he's in the middle. He's directly in the middle. He's weighs things up, not angry, he's not too calm, he's just cruising through life. That will stay. That will last. That will be eternal. Because that is the middle, never peaks, because it doesn't peak and it doesn't unpeak. It's just in the middle. Anything which is extreme is going to disappear. Because it's going to eventually peak and then it'll come back to the middle. So this is the Maharal's understanding. He says that the nations of the world, they get us at their extremes. They have that time. If you go through history, there's been so many nations that have come and gone. They've all had that time. As a very simple example, what would be a very simple example to a culture, a nation that peaked and then just went, just left?
The Greeks.
The Greeks, exactly. The Greeks, they came and they went. They came with a radical, extreme focus on sports, on culture, on ideology, on philosophy. And they were extreme in what they were doing. They came, they bothered us, and they're gone. Give me something, an example from recent history of a, I don't call them a nation, of somebody that started up with us. The Nazis. Nazi Germany. Right? Reb David, am I right about that? They peaked. So. You do think so?
Yeah, Germany.
Yeah, Germany. Does this go louder, Josh? Or is that... There we go. Perfect. Yeah, you know, Germany. What in them is it? Now they stabilize. But before this, they had 6 years or 8 years maybe where they peaked. Now, by all accounts, that was extreme. That was extreme barbarism and animal-like behavior. Now, it didn't last. We lasted and they didn't. Now, am I saying that we didn't lose 6 million Jews? No.
Tsarist Russia and the pogroms and creating a pale of settlement, that doesn't exist.
Say one more time, Rav David?
Tsarist Russia, you know, the pogroms and the pale of settlement. And you can only live in a certain area. Maybe we have to live in certain areas, but it's our choice.
Right, 100%, 100%. So that means if you look at history, what happens is that there have been nations that have started with us, and they came at us with an extremity, and they had their hours, they had their years, but they were successful. At the end of the day, they went. Did we suffer losses? Of course. How many Jews have been killed over the generations? But at the end of the day, we're still sitting here. Why is it like that? Because we don't live on the extreme. We're just plugging along. We are just eternal. We're eternal people. That's the name of the Sefer, the Maral. Called Netzach Yisrael. The eternity of the Jew. You could beat him. You could kill him. Right? You could. You could do that. But that's going to come and it's going to go. We are just still going to be here. Why is it that all the nations have come and gone and we haven't? Because we're not radical. Radicalism, you can have people that decide that, you know, suicide bombing is the way to go. And they're going to be successful. But they're going to have a time, and then they're going to max out. They're going to phase out. They're not going to last. Because you can't last on the extreme. You can only last when you're in the middle. It's eye-opening. Now, am I making sense? I think it's eye-opening concept. Now, here comes the beauty of this Mara. He says the same thing is true with the time of year that we live in. The seasons. The seasons are the same concept. He says right now, it's the hottest time of the year. He says the 17th of Tammuz until Tisha B'av, and we know this, in the calendar year, it's the hottest time. We're living in 95 degrees every day, 100 degrees every day. It's hot. It's really hot. And he says extreme heat is just like you can have a radical nation, you can have a radical time and extreme in the weather. And it's not random. This means that we're at the time in the year where we're at the edge of something, where heat is being pushed to its extreme. And he says the reason why a nation that comes along with a radical concept to eradicate the Jewish people, the time of year that they're going to be successful is going to be at a time where the heat is at its extreme. Because it's a radical time. It's not a middle of the road time. He says, it's beautiful. He says, when do we have the festival? What time of year are the festivals? The three main festivals, the ones that the Torah talks about. We have Pesach. When is Pesach?
Spring.
Spring. Spring is middle. Spring is in the middle. The Jewish people celebrate in the middle. We are in the middle, and we celebrate at the time of year, which is in the middle. When is Shavuos? Not long after Pesach. Or the end of the spring.
Yeah, end of spring. It's still before the solstice.
Right. It's still before that. Exactly. Now, when is Sukkot?
Fall.
Once again in the middle. Isn't it amazing? Mm-hmm. So, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot are all at times in the year which are not radical. And they're eternal. They're just not too hot, not too cold. That's what it should be, at least, in the middle. He says, when are the fast days that we have? He says, the fast days that we have, the days of mourning that we have 17th of Tammuz to Tisha B'av, which is the most extreme weather of the year in heat. What about on the other side? We have
another fast day. It's the longest days of the year, too.
It's the longest days. That's also true. Right, that's it. Right, Seb, it's a good point. Right, the longest days of the year. What is another fast day that we have? What other fast days do we have?
Yom Kippur.
Right, so Yom Kippur is a different type of fasting. Yom Kippur, is he talks about it. But Yom Kippur is more like a fast day, not out of mourning. It's a fast day from elevation. I mean, when I say a fast day, I mean a fast day which is commemorating something bad that happened.
So Yom Kippur
is the fast of Esther is also not really a sad one.
Which one?
Fast of Esther is commemorating her prayer. But, Carrie, I'm happy to expound on that, but it's, if we could just put that aside for a second, the fast of Esther, first of all, there are many leniencies which you see in halacha and law, in Jewish law, but the fast of Esther is a day of prayer. The Mishnah talks about the fact there's four or five, that we have which are commemorating terrible things that happened to us over the year. Well, what other fast days do we have? 17th of Tammuz, right? That's one we spoke about. We have something which is the 10th of Teves, Star of Teves. Star of Teves is where? What time of year?
December.
It's in the heart of the winter. In the heart of the winter. It's like you have Hanukkah, and then it's like right, it's like 10 days after the end of Hanukkah. It's not like that. It's deep, deep in the winter. And what happened on the 10th of Teves? That's when they first breached the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. So they start, if you look at the timeline, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash started on the 10th of Teves. They only successfully made it and took over the city on the 17th of Tammuz, and they finished its destruction on the 9th of Av, which means that they only succeeded at radical times of the year. They started on the 10th of Teves in the winter, radical winter. They didn't succeed until it got to the peak of the summer, because that's a time of year where it's very hot. And that's when they completed it. And this is a time which is dangerous. It's a day, whenever you're at an extreme, you're at a time of danger. But what's the comfort? We're in the heart of this extremity, and it's a dangerous time. If you look in halacha, it says a person shouldn't walk alone at certain hours during these days, because there are demons and dangerous mazikin who are out there. So it's a dangerous time. What do you think?
Rabbi Reisman said there's two dangerous ones lurking around right now.
Yeah, there's two of them. All right. Two dangerous demons lurking around, says Josh. Apparently he's seen them.
That's just in Pine Valley.
Yeah,
what do you say?
That's in Pine Valley.
That's in my valley.
I'm doing battle with them in my dreams.
There you go. Take them down.
As the Rampal says,
what about dreams?
We experience demons. While
we're sleeping. We definitely could. So this is the scary part. The scary part is that what the title was, why is this time of year destined for punishment? So we explained that nations are radical and times of year are radical, and the radical nation will succeed in a radical time. What is the comfort that will come out? What's the comfort right now?
That Tisha B'Av will be a holiday.
That's true. That is true. But let's say it's not a holiday. What's the comfort? You're right, Carrie. But let's say it's not a comfort. What's the comfort? Let's say it's not a holiday. So what is our comfort? The comfort is that because it's extreme, I know it's not going to last. That's the comfort. That's the comfort. The comfort is that precisely because they're being successful is how I know that they're not going to last and we are. Again, the Holocaust is an example. Does that mean that everyone's going to survive? No. But if you want to know if the Jewish nation is going to survive, or they're going to survive, who's going to have the last laugh? The one who's extreme is never going to last. The edges are going to fall over the edge. The ones who are in the middle of the road are going to be plugging straight along, and you can't beat them. You hit them, you shoot them. It's not going to make a difference. We're not budging. We're down the middle. So this time of year is dangerous, but because it's dangerous, we also know that it's going to end. The Maharal writes about this, is that how do we know Mashiach is going to come? How do we know Mashiach is going to come? How do we know that the state of what we're living in is going to change. Who's to guarantee that? Maybe we're just going to last like this forever. Who said it's ever going to change? Right? It's a question maybe we didn't all think about that, but maybe subconsciously we're like, who's to say, you know, we're living in a, this is it. It's going to be anti-Semitism, and there's going to be people dying, and there's going to be people sick. And who's to say things are going to get better? Right? Who's to guarantee that? You know what the Maharal says? He says, I tell you, very simple. This is not the norm. If it's not the norm, it's not going to last. We have to realize this, that the state that we're living in, the fact that we are persecuted, the fact that we are in exile, the fact that we don't have our own country in peace, the fact that we don't have all these normal things, it's upsetting, but that also tells me it's not going to last. Anything, if you would have asked somebody in the, again, I'm back to the Holocaust, and it's not, we can't really get into the minds of those people, but if you would ask somebody 3 years in, do you think this is going to last forever? I don't know what he would have told you. But like I say, it's hard to get into their minds. But we would say as an outsider, there's no way it's going to last forever. This extreme barbarity is going to peak at some point and disappear. It might come back and then it'll go. But it's not going to last forever. You never have, if you look through world history, you're never going to have radical stuff lasting forever. It's going to peak and it'll phase out. And another one's going to come. They'll peak and they'll phase out. Another one, they peak and they phase out.
Just like coronavirus, it'll peak.
Very true. Very true. Josh said like coronavirus. That's a good point. That's a good point. The virus will come and the virus will go at some point. Will it be 6 months? Will it be a year? Will it be 10 years? From a big picture, at some point, it's going to have, what do they call it? The curve. It'll either have a V or an L, they call it. Whatever you want to call it, but at some point, anything extreme, people, mass epidemics are extreme. It's a good point for you. It's a very good point. Epidemics come and they go. Does that mean that people don't die? No, people do die, but we know they will go. We just hope that we're going to be able to survive. So this is number one.
What time? Could you say that refusing to wear a mask is part of the extreme? Because by wearing the mask, you're saying, I recognize that this is out there, and I recognize that I could get it, and I'm going to try not to, and I recognize that I could, that if I had it, I could give it to somebody else, and I don't want to.
Right.
So that it's the more moderate way is to wear the mask, whereas
the
mask is the extreme.
I'm going to defer the question because I don't want to get into specific. You know, it's a specific question. What is this or what is that? You know.
Well, what I'm saying is, there's a better chance that the coronavirus will disappear if we take steps to do it. The same way, it's a better chance that the Mashiach will come if we take steps to make sure.
David. I agree with you 1,000%. I agree with you 1,000%. 100%. That is definitely true. We have to do everything that we can in, like you're saying, the moderate way. Yeah. There may be a difference between some people. What is moderate? That's what I was saying. To get into the specifics of what is moderate, what is not, is going to always be a discussion. But everyone should agree that not to this, not to that. It should be in the middle. Now, I want to share, we have another 10 minutes. Let's get into the specifics of Tisha B'Av. And show how the time of when it happened was once again down to the sign. Well, 2 points, let me see. 17th of Av is the beginning of the extreme time of year, and it ends on Tisha B'Av in the 9th of Av. That means the 17th is when it started unfolding, and the 9th is when it ended. I mean, they started, they breached the walls, they did this, they did that, and then the things completely were destroyed in the 9th of Av. And then it phased out. And then it's over. Let's go back at the five things and take a look at them and look at the other five things and take a look at them. The five things on the 17th of Av, the Maharal writes, are all things that are not the end. They're all things that are the start of a problem. It wasn't the end of a problem. For example, the Luchos were broken. is the Luchas breaking the tablet breaker? Is that a final problem? It's not that. It's bad, but all right, the Luchas broke, and what do we get? A second set of Luchas. We spoke about the difference between the first and the second set, but you can't say that it's over by breaking the tablet. It's the start of a problem, but we got a replacement. They weren't as good, but it wasn't the end. It was the beginning of a problem. Breaching of a wall is the beginning of a problem, not the end of the city. Right? The city's not destroyed yet. It's just it's starting. If you make a hole in that wall, that means it's going to start falling apart. The daily sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash stopping is not the end of the Beis HaMikdash. It just means that something's seeping in. What used to be daily is not daily anymore. But the Beis HaMikdash is still functioning. Putting an idol in the Beis HaMikdash. Once again, you haven't destroyed it. You've just started a problem. Burning a Sefer Torah. Terrible. But there's other Sefer Torah out there. Right? It's not as if you've burned every Torah in the world. You've burned the Sefer Torah, which is the start and the sign of a system which is unfolding. But it's not the end of a problem. All five things that happened on the 17th is the beginning process of problems. The five things that happened on the 9th of Av were final problems. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It's over. The second Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It's over. The city of Beitar, destroyed. The city of Yerushalayim, threshed. It's gone. The people in the generation of the Midbar are not going into Eretz Yisrael. Done. They did not go to Eretz Yisrael. The five things that happened on the 9th of Av are all finalities. That means the five things on 17th of Tammuz, again, the 3 weeks is a radical period. It's an extreme of the year. And in extremes, things fall apart. But they fall apart in two ways. They start off unfolding, and then they end off completely destroyed. All five things on the 17th were beginnings of problems. The five things on Tisha B'Av was the end of the problems. Now, I'm going to say one thing, which the Maharal doesn't say. Says it somewhere else, is that our sages teach us that Mashiach is going to be born on what day? Tisha B'Av. The 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av. The lowest point in history is when Mashiach is going to be born. Now the question is, how on earth do you understand that? Isn't Tisha B'Av our low point? Isn't that the time where we would least expect Mashiach to be born? To say that he's going to be born on Tisha B'Av? How do we understand that? Mashiach born on Tisha B'Av. What's that supposed to mean? So if we understand the way the Maharal doesn't write this over here, I'm going to borrow what he says somewhere else. What's the understanding to that based on what we're saying today? Tisha B'Av is the end of the extreme. Tisha B'Av is when it peaks. When it peaks, you know that what? It's going to be over soon. When the person explodes, like I said before, when a person's anger explodes, it's not comfortable for those around, but they know that he just peaked and soon he's going to calm down and come back to his senses. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It's the saddest day in the Jewish calendar. But because it's the saddest day, the most extreme day, we also know that this is the beginning of redemption. Because it's not going to get worse. The extreme just peaked. They finished. They destroyed it. It got rid of the Beis HaMikdash. I now know that good times are coming. And we're going to start heading towards middle of the road times of year. We're going to start heading towards Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, spring, fall. We're going to start heading towards Sukkot. We know that it's peak and good times are coming. So if you can say it like this, Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av, because it's precisely on the day where things are the worst that we now know they're going to eventually settle back down to the norm. When the Jewish nation hits the worst point, which is so not the norm for it, we now know that they're going to start stabilizing and getting back to where they're supposed to be. That would be, does that make sense? That would be an understanding of why Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. Now, let's see what time have we got. 5 minutes. Let's give it 5 more minutes. And let's see if we could get into a little bit the dates of what happened on Tisha B'Av. The Gemara teaches us, the Talmud writes, that they actually entered, the timeline is like this. They entered the Beis HaMikdash on the 7th of Av. They entered on day number seven. They ate that, you can imagine, they just sat, hung around in the base of Mikdash, which is the holiest spot on earth, and they were eating and drinking. They made it into like a club, a bar, whatever. They partied there on the seventh and the eighth. So they actually took control of the base of Mikdash. They degraded it by eating and drinking there, partying on the seventh and the eighth. On the ninth of Av, towards evening, and listen carefully to the timeline. On the ninth of Av, towards the evening of the ninth, that means towards the end of the day of the ninth, they lit the fire. That's when they actually lit the fire. And on the tenth of Av is actually when most of it actually burned. Which means that Tisha B'Av is really toward the end of the night is when they lit the fire. The 10th of Av is really where most of it burned. What day would you have made Tisha B'Av? On the 9th or on the 10th? Right? The 9th is towards the end of the night they lit the fire, and on the 10th they actually, most of the Beis HaMikdash burned on the 10th of Av, the day after Tisha B'Av. So why do we have Tisha B'Av? The Gemara writes that they wanted to make Tisha B'Av in the 10th. But that's when most of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Actually, that's why in Halacha, in Jewish law, even after Tisha B'Av, we're told to wait until midday of the 10th before eating meat, doing laundry, that type of stuff, because the Beis HaMikdash is burning on the 10th. So why is it that we commemorate and mourn the Beis HaMikdash on the 9th, which is the beginning of when the Beis HaMikdash was lit? Why do we do it on that and not on the day when it was burned? What would you say? The Maharal says like this, and we'll do it in a two-step. Understanding is like this. When is the real problem? When it's burned, or when the thing is set in place that it will burn? That means like this.
There's a moment in which you can actually stop it.
Right. But that's a good point, Rav David. But we're assuming at this point that they were in control, and the Jewish people, even after the flame was lit, they had no power to stop it. I mean, they were planning on making, the Jews were kicked out. You know, we weren't in a position to come with a fire truck and get it out. This thing was going down. The one that lights the match, he's the one that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. When did it actually burn? That's just going to unfold. But we're always going to commemorate time which caused the destruction. The actual destruction is sad, but that's just a sort of a done deal. We're gonna be upset. We're going to mourn at the point in history where everything was set into motion that we are going to lose it. When it actually comes out, when it actually unfolds, it's sad, but the saddest point is when it's set into motion to unfold. Now, here, this is the beauty of the Maharal. Listen to this. We know that there's day and night. Now, what does day and night signify in Jewish law? What is day and night? Day always refers to good stuff, kindness, things are clear, you can see. It's always a time of, day is always referred to as a positive. Nighttime, in the words of our sages, is always a time where there's a lack of light, where things are not clear, where we can't really see each other, things are blurry, we don't know what's going to be, and it's also a dangerous time at night. Daytime is nowhere near it, is it? Daytime is not dangerous. Nighttime is when it's dangerous, in a physical way and a spiritual way. What time would you choose, if you were God, to set it? What time of the day are we the most susceptible to destruction of a Beis HaMikdash? Day, night, or a different time? What time of day are we the most, like we're saying, it's the time of year which is extreme, which makes us susceptible. In the time of year, what time of the day are we, or the night, are we the most susceptible to destruction?
Right.
So Josh says night, and that's what I would have said too, because nighttime is a time of destruction. But if you travel, Josh.
Uh-oh. Do we learn about this?
Nighttime is... No. Joe. Nighttime is... It's already destroyed. What sets into motion that nighttime will unfold? That's when the sun starts going down. So that means as the day is like now, it's already nighttime, it's already unfolded. That's like the 10th of Av, when the Beis Mikdash is actually burning. But what do we really mourn? We really mourn the thing that set into place that it will be destroyed. What time of day is setting into motion that there will be night? That is towards evening, when the sun is going down. Because when the sun is going down, it's heading towards destruction. The nighttime is destroyed. The Beis Mikdash is destroyed. But what time is it going to be that they're going to light the mat to destroy it? It's going to be as the day is waning. This is what the Gemara tells us. It's beautiful. The Gemara, it's not beautiful that it was destroyed, but the depths of what they're teaching us is that the time when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed was on the afternoon of the night as it was getting towards the night of the night. Now, give me one more minute. I'm over time. Why was this on day number 9 going into day number 10? Right? This is the final piece that I want to share with you. And this is another Maharal classic. He says, the biggest number that exists is 10. He says, that's the biggest number. He says, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that's a complete set of numbers. 11 is not a new number. 11 is just a set of 10 plus another 1 in the next cycle of 10. 20 is twice 10. 100 is 10 sets of 10. 1,000 is 100 sets of 10. And you can go on forever. But in numbers, in different numbers, 1, 2, 3, 1 is a number, 2 is a number, 10 is the highest number. Right? In a esoteric way, we also know that there are 10 sephiros. Right? There is no number which is more than 10. God created the world with 10 utterances. We have 10 writings on the Luchos, 5 and 5. In destruction, it's going to be the same thing. The max destruction is always going to be the number 10. The max destruction, that's why you have 5 bad things happen on the 17th of Tammuz, 5 bad things on the Tisha B'Av, which makes a total of 10. 10 is complete destruction. What day was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed on what day of the month? The 10th of Av, like we said. When was it set into motion to destroy? On the night as you're heading to the 10th, because you're heading towards the peak of destruction. So, if I could summarize what we're saying and try and take a lesson out of this. The time of year is extreme, and the nations are extreme. We're not extreme, we're moderate. We are in between. And that's why we're eternal and they're not. Because anyone who extremes, we know that who is extreme, we know they'll peak and they'll phase out. We're never going to phase out. We're not going to phase in, we're not going to phase out. We're just going to be straight through the middle. It's a dangerous time, but don't worry, because it's dangerous, it's going to peak on Tisha B'Av, and then Mashiach is going to be born. Why is Mashiach going to be born on Tisha B'Av? Because it's the dangerous time of the year, the most dangerous, it peaks, and now we know it's going to start getting better. The festivals are all in fall and spring, because that's middle of the line, which is when we celebrate. In the month itself, the time of day when it was destroyed was at the point in the day where we're heading towards destruction, and that was afternoon going to evening where the sun is going down. It actually burned on the 10th, which is the peak number of destruction. But what we know is that after this 10th, we're going to be reborn, because that has to happen. It must be that we'll be reborn. This is not the normal. This is extreme. This is, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous time of year. We better, you know, I asked Rabbi Weiland at the Polo. I was preparing this a little bit in the afternoon. And I asked Rabbi Weiland, so what's the message from all of this? What do I say? What's the message from all of this? So he told me, in classic Rabbi Weiland style, that the message is that it's a dangerous time and we better behave. you know, that, which is a true message. You know, that this is, no question, a dangerous time of year. It said not to, a person shouldn't have a court case against a non-Jew. This time of year, probably going to lose. This is?
That's actually very true.
You had it?
My brother did.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
I'll tell you about it.
He'll tell me about it. Okay, wow. Josh has his evidence today.
I told him, don't do it on Tisha
B'Av. Yeah, I have a friend over here. My friend has a friend who, is not religious. And this person was a driving for Uber. And my friend was convincing his friend, don't work on Tisha B'Av. Don't work on Tisha B'Av. Not a good day to work. Don't work. He wasn't observing it. He said, don't work on Tisha B'Av. This guy didn't listen, and he got into a terrible car accident with a passenger. And, you know, again, we're not God, and we're told, dangerous time. Things are, don't play around. Many people don't fly on planes during this time of year. It's really a time which, no question about it, this is dangerous. You want to know why it's dangerous? Because it's extreme. And we're not extreme, but the extreme people will have success at an extreme time of year. But the comfort is, it's not going to last. Can't last. Nothing extreme can last. The Jewish nation is eternal because we're not extreme. We just keep on going. And that is what should we do at this time of year? Like Rabbi Weiland said, we better behave, and we should just keep on chugging. Consistency. We're not going to be extreme. We're not going to start doing this or start doing that. We're just going to get up every morning. We're going to pray. We're going to put on tefillin. We're going to go to work. We're going to come home. We're going to do acts of kindness. We're just going to be consistently good people. Consistently good people don't disappear. The people that disappear are the ones who are extreme this way or extreme the other way. Either disappear one way or they disappear the other way. The people that are just consistent and good, we're just good, middle of the line people, they're nice, friendly, happy, good people. Those, it's an eternal nation. Yes, it's dangerous. Yes, they might have times where they're going to win, but they're going to disappear. Without a question, the Jewish nation is the only one that will survive forever. All right?
Shabbat,
everybody. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And next week we're going to go back to the Sfasemis. We're going to do another piece on Tisha B'Av, and the discussion is going to be, with Hashem's help, the understanding of what the holy city of Yerushalayim is all about. A beautiful Sfasemis. What is the depth of this holiness of the city of Yerushalayim? That we'll talk about, God willing, next week.
All right. Go on.
Good luck, everybody. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.